Case number 21-3752, T.M. et al. Versus Richard DeWine et al. Arguments not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Lewis, you may proceed for the appellants.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Paul Lewis, and I'm counsel for the plaintiff's appellants here. As a note for the court, I have reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal. As a putative class of Title IV-E eligible foster children who are placed into relative foster homes that the state of Ohio approved as meeting Ohio's approval standards, the plaintiff children and their relative foster parents have an established right to the same federally required foster care maintenance payments as Ohio provides on behalf of foster children placed.
Why is that? Doesn't, as I read the statute, I understand that Ohio has to submit a plan for, to get federal funding, Ohio has to submit a plan to HHS, and HHS has to approve that plan. And that's never happened for your clients, correct?
That's incorrect, Your Honor.
Why?
In Ohio's state plan, which is it's designated in the record, right at page ID 1178, Ohio, through its state plan, expressly informed the Department of Health and Human Services that it was going to effectuate Congress's and the statute's expressed preference for relative caregivers.
When did it inform them?
I'm sorry?
What page is this in your brief? Because I guess I didn't quite understand.
This is discussed at the, I don't have the exact page, Your Honor, but.
I thought the idea was you gave the specific criteria that you're gonna use, and I think in Ohio they call it certify. The certification language to HHS, and HHS by statute has to approve that. And you're saying HHS is also expressly approved that Ohio can use a lower standard for approved foster homes and pay them the exact same money as they pay the like the certified homes.
Yes. Yes. So once again, 671A19 of the statute expressly states a preference for relative caregivers. And within the state plan, and once again, I'm referring to now page ID 1178. Within the state plan itself, where Ohio informs the Department of Health and Human Services how it is going to effectuate that.
Is there a difference between inform and approve? Are we just different?
Well, ultimately.
Like if I tell someone I'm going to do something, if they have to approve, if they don't approve it, then that's obviously.
Yes, well, they said they explained exactly how they were going to effectuate the preference for relative caregivers, and that's through Ohio's approval process. And the citation for that.
I understand the approval process, but you're saying HHS approved this dual track?
Yes.
What's the point of having. The whole point of the HHS having its payment for licensed homes, I think, was to require a certain standard of oversight by the states. And so you're saying that they expressly approved Ohio to have a separate track.
Yes.
And Ohio is not understood that way. Ohio is not understood that way because they have this KPS or whatever it's called, this new KSP system where they have two tracks and they pay one lower than the other, but they encourage the lower paid one to get up to the higher level. So Ohio's never understood it that way also, right?
Well, I would disagree to some extent because, once again, right in the state plan that was approved, Ohio cites to its admin code 5101:24205A-C, which states that Ohio is going to explore relatives as a first priority, states that the homes of the relatives approved will be approved in accordance with Rule 5101:24218 of the Administrative Code. Then when you go to 4218A1, it becomes clear Ohio can only approve kin. Ohio expressly set up its approval process for kin, and Ohio informed the Department of Health and Human Services of that.
But why? I don't understand. They could approve people, they could do whatever they want, but the federal government has taken the position, my understanding is, that the same standard has to apply for a foster family home under 671A10 or whatever that provision is, and under the regs, which I understand maybe they're looking at changing the regs, but under the current regs, you have to meet the same standards, right? And Ohio is saying, we don't meet the same standards for the approved kin.
Your Honor, respectfully, the words identical or same when it comes to foster care maintenance payments or the definition of foster family home doesn't appear anywhere. To the extent that those outdated.
Well, it says any. It says The standards established shall be applied by the state to any foster family home. I mean, doesn't that,
that's
or
right.
child care institution. That and by the way, HHS said in the amicus brief that they filed in the JBK case, they say there's no substantive difference between the requirements for licensing and the requirements for approval. I mean, that's HHS's own position, right?
Yes, Your Honor, but HHS took an alternate position as a premise in its notice of proposed rulemaking. But either way, Your Honor, we are asking for an application of the plain meaning of the statute. This should start and end with the words of the statute. The word or is meant in the disjunctive. The word or does not mean and. Additionally, this court in Glisson stated that there are two separate categories.
But I understand that, and that makes sense to me, that certainly it contemplates, let's say, there could be licensed or approved.
That's right.
And Glisson seems to suggest at least treats them differently, right?
It's two categories, yes.
But it's also up to HHS to implement that at some point. I mean, in other words, it seems to me there could be two tracks. A state might have two tracks and get them approved, or HHS might say in their regs, like apparently they are going to do sometime in the future, that there are two tracks. But right now, it seems like they're saying it has to be the same standard.
To the extent that HHS said that in the past, or in the manual cited by the district court, it's not entitled to any deference. Once again, and this was the district court's fundamental mistake, it started with the HHS regs, it started with the manual, but this type of analysis should start and end with the words of the statute. And then the defendant states that the word or doesn't really mean or, and the word approved.
It has to be read in conjunction with the other parts of the statute, and I think 671A10B cuts against you. It explains what licensure means. It explains that the standard, that all the standards have to be approved by HHS, essentially. The state can do whatever it wants, but if it wants federal funding for certain kinds of homes, it has to get HHS approval.
Yes, Your Honor, and once again, through the state plan, HHS did approve the separate track. The separate track being defined by Ohio's own administrative codes that they told HHS that was how they were going to effectuate the express preference for relatives.
Isn't that what the new proposed rule does? You cited supplemental authority with this new proposed rule.
Yes.
Isn't that what the rule's trying to accomplish?
Well, yes, and what the rule's going to accomplish is significant because in 2018, Congress further clarified exactly what the statute means by adding or approval to the tail end of the statute, and to the extent that there is evidence of the purpose behind this in legislative intent, Senator Orrin Hatch expressed...
I don't care about that. But,
okay.
but why... I guess my point was if they're going to adopt a new rule to clarify something, it's arguably because it's not allowed currently. In other words, is it possible if the rule currently should be interpreted as the way you're asking us to interpret it, that there's no reason to amend the rule?
Respectfully, the statute
new rule?
Should be interpreted the way that the plaintiffs propose. All HHS guidance predated the clarification to the statute.
Do you think, so let's assume that you're right today, and if Ohio went to HHS, they would get reimbursed, or would HHS take the position that we're not reimbursing you? I mean, my understanding from HHS, and again, this is in JKB and what their position is there, we haven't asked for their position in this case, but I mean, if they took the position that we're not going to reimburse, then what are we going to do? What's Ohio supposed to do?
Your Honor, HHS would be bound to reimburse Ohio because Ohio is doing, with the exception of paying foster care maintenance payments, Ohio is otherwise doing exactly what Ohio told HHS that it would do in its approved plan. And this is right in those two Ohio administrative regulations, one of which is cited
on... If HHS said, we're not going to pay you, would you sue them? Who's going to... I'm confused about what... Again, this confuses me because I'm on the other case and I'm on this one, and nobody ever bothers to ask HHS what their view is, and I'm curious what their view is here. You're saying their view is they're going to write a check?
Oh, HHS would be bound to reimburse Ohio.
You're saying they would be bound to. I'm saying if I called them right now and said, hey, are you guys going to pay these guys if these guys win the case? And their answer will be yes, we'll write a check tomorrow. If that's true, then why aren't we just doing this? Because Ohio would get reimbursed. I guess I can ask your
Ohio
friend on the other
absolutely
side.
Should be doing this. In fact, Ohio is required to do this, both through its approved state plan and through the plain meaning of the definition of foster family home. Once again,
I think what you're missing in answer to Judge Nalbandian's question is you say, well, HHS then will reimburse. They're not a party to this case. We're not ordering them to do anything. The fact that we say that Ohio has to reimburse doesn't mean they has to pay doesn't mean they're going to get reimbursed from the federal government.
Well, ultimately, it's a two-step process. Here, the plaintiffs, the relief that the plaintiffs are seeking is that Ohio define the second track, the second category, as this court stated in Glisson, of foster family homes as the approved relative kin and the pay the foster care maintenance payments. That's step one. That's what we're asking for right here. Step two, and I believe this is articulated in 42 USC 674, is that Ohio would then seek about give or take two-thirds reimbursement from the federal government. If the federal government refuses to do that, reimburse Ohio in that respect, frankly, that's an issue between Ohio and the federal government, and HHS should be reimbursing.
Wait, why couldn't Ohio at that point say, since we're not getting reimbursed, we're going to stop payments? Well, you don't have an enforceable right if we can't get... Your enforceable right depends solely on whether we get reimbursed, right?
The reimbursements and the foster care... No. The reimbursements and the foster care maintenance payments are two different concepts guided by two different sections, one by 672, which is about foster care maintenance payments, and then I believe 674 is about the Ohio's ability and the process for getting reimbursed.
I thought they both looked at the same definition section. They both go back to 671, don't they?
Well, 671 is the state plan, and once again, insofar as 671 is concerned, all of the baseline standards, all the baseline safety standards promulgated by 671A20, A through C are unequivocally met through this approval process, through Ohio's administrative codes. And we know this because the HHS signed off on Ohio saying exactly what it was going to do. It was specifically going to approve kin.
You know what Ohio was doing was, you would agree that the certification standards in Ohio are higher than the approval standards.
Yes.
So I thought what Ohio was
different. But yes.
But I thought... higher. I thought requiring a higher level of care or service by the foster home. And so I thought what Ohio was doing here was saying for these family foster homes, we're going to allow you, I think it's now for 6 months or something, to be an approved home to get much less money, but we've incented the idea of if you can get meet the full certification standard, you get a lot more money through this federal program. That's how I understand the system. And what you're saying is actually no, because under your rule, there's no incentive at all for the family foster homes to get to the certification level because they apparently get paid a full amount for being approved.
That's correct. That's correct.
So it seems like totally contrary to what Ohio is. And maybe Ohio is completely wrong. It just seems completely contrary to the way Ohio set the system. And so their understanding, obviously, of how this works.
Ohio, the notion of the separate system wasn't articulated to HHS in any respect. In fact, Ohio articulated the opposite to HHS. The Supreme Court in Miller said that these foster care maintenance payments need to be provided to the children. That's who the benefit attaches to, the children, regardless of where by happenstance they might happen to be placed. And in fact, that the authorization of an approval procedure as an alternative to actual licensing literally evinced Congress's desire to entitle children placed in relative foster homes to full foster care benefits. We're just asking that the court order Ohio to comply with the statute, and the kinship issue and those payments are really irrelevant because foster care maintenance payments and foster family home, I mean, that's a defined term. And once the home is approved per Ohio's administrative codes.
To me, your ruling just totally really cuts against the Ohio system and 671.
Your Honor, respect.
You're rereading. But anyhow, can I ask before you sit down about the immunity question?
Sure.
The threshold issue, which maybe we should have got to first. So as I understand, your request, I mean, there's sort of a nomenclature aspect to this issue, but it felt to me that the request in your complaint to order the state or to enjoin defendants from failing or refusing to make foster care maintenance payments.
Yes.
That phrasing certainly sounds like this case is much about money and not about sort of some kind of other injunctive relief.
Your Honor, here There is no request for relief for any damages, for anything backward-looking, for any compensation. Here, we are simply asking
on a forward-looking payments
on a forward-looking basis for Ohio to comply with the federal law. And as the Supreme Court said in the Milliken case, even when there's a direct and substantial ancillary effect on the
state. That's not an answer. My point is the way you phrased it, failing or refusing to make foster care maintenance payments.
Well, there
that's, you want defendants enjoined from doing that. That's not ancillary. That's front and center.
Well, Your Honor, I would suggest that based on the Price case, by definition, it has to be ancillary because Price was another case that involved Medicare benefits, but another entitlement case.
When is it never not ancillary then under your rule?
Well, it's not ancillary
because every case requires some interpretation of a federal statute or a federal rule or state rule, and you're saying
when it's backwards looking, when it's compensation, when it's damage.
But it's not backwards. No, but if there's forward. Isn't the rule the same for forward looking? If it's essentially for monetary. Ex parte Young. I mean, I appreciate your point about retrospective versus perspective,
yes.
but if it's a requesting perspective relief for exclusively monetary relief, would you say that?
But once again, Your Honor, I disagree with your characterization of this.
Well, I know that, but I'm just reading your characterization.
Well, so I would just turn this court's attention to Price.
Go back and finish the answer to the question that you were asked earlier, will you? Because I'm interested in actually in the answer.
Of course, I
that
apologize.
Is what is the difference between ancillary and direct?
Well, so by definition, under the precedent that this court set in Price, a federal court may, without violating the 11th Amendment, issue a prospective injunction against a state officer to end a continuing violation of federal law. And that's important because in that case, it was some sort of monetary relief through the Medicaid entitlement program. When there is a federal right to certain entitlement, it's already been determined through Price, and this is exactly how the district court analyzed this issue, that there is no 11th Amendment bar to ordering the case on ordering the state on a go-forward basis to comply with federal law.
I guess my question, which I'm sorry if I didn't give you time to answer, which is then when is money ever not ancillary? In other words, why doesn't this just destroy Ex parte Young? Which, well, this, I mean, even though we really want money, we have some slight, you're required to find some violation of federal law or state law, which is true in basically every case. But why isn't money always ancillary then?
In particular, in the federal entitlement case, line of cases, and that's the WUS school, but particularly Price, it is ancillary and it has to be ancillary. And you're asking me, when is it not ancillary? And it's not ancillary if there's an express request for some sort of damage or some sort of compensation. I mean, for example,
that's not what I read to you from your complaint. That's not that.
No, we are simply asking for a declaration that federal law be complied with, which is exactly what the plaintiffs in Price asked for. That was an entitlement benefit through federal law, even though payments were directly involved, I think to Your Honor's point, and that's exactly what we seek here. If there are no further questions, I will
stop. Okay, you'll have your rebuttal time.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. First of all, HHS will not reimburse Ohio for payments made to homes that do not meet the standards that have been approved by HHS. That is, the standards that are in Ohio's Title IV plan, to answer that question. And I agree.
The approval part is part of your plan, though? I mean, you've told the HHS that we have this approval process to get kids temporarily or whatever in relatives' homes, right?
No, Your Honor, there's only one plan relevant for the Title IV question, the eligibility, and that is the plan that was reviewed, submitted, and approved by the Secretary.
Okay, so the approval part is not part of the plan?
Not at all. In fact, all of
only the standards that would meet A10 and whatever.
That's right, Your Honor. So in Ohio's administrative code, there are distinct areas. There's 2-42-18, which is the separate state system that is not within the Title IV plan, and that is the system under which plaintiffs' homes have been allowed to be foster caregivers. However, the entire provision...
Do you think that the statute, the license or approve language, contemplates that there could be two tracks that both satisfy foster family home definition. You could do it if you wanted to. I mean, I understand under the reg to me is a problem right now for the other side as currently drafted.
That's right.
If the reg were to change, and like apparently they're contemplating it, would that be permissible under the statute, or would there still? I'm not sure how to reconcile this 671A10 where it's the same standard has to apply, right, to license or approve. But normally we would read license or approve to be two different things, right?
A couple of answers to that, Your Honor. I think to the extent a dual track plan is submitted to HHS and approved by HHS, I can't really answer whether HHS would approve that, but I will say that at the very least, that would be the standards that have been approved by HHS for a Title IV-E plan. Now, should the regulation change, which first of all, the regulation's not final, and so it's not, the court should not give a deference in any way. But should the regulation change, the outcome of this case does not change because Ohio's state system, which is a separate plan that is outside of our Title IV-E plan, and if you'll allow me, I'll get to a reason for why that's the case, but that plan has never been reviewed or approved by HHS. And there is a point to that particular plan, and that is this. Some of the children, when they are removed, sometimes abruptly from their homes, their short-term welfare would be maximized by being placed with a face that they know, a relative who can step in and provide that continuity of care. But that does not diminish the importance of some of the standards that are in our certification system under Title IV-E. And those things include things like training, include fire safety inspection. And these things are actually important for the long-term welfare of the child. And so to the extent a relative caregiver has taken in a child in these emergent circumstances, it's really important to the state that the relative then go on to get certified. And that's why Ohio actually does provide the information, provides financial support throughout that process.
Well, the statute requires that, right?
No, not at all, Your Honor.
I thought the statute required that you provide information to the... I thought this was a point that would help you. Doesn't the statute contemplate two tracks where there would be an approval, but then that person would have information and the state would have to inform that person about how to get certified so that they could actually be part of the Title IV-E program?
Your Honor, information might be required, but that doesn't mean information sans meeting the actual standards, and that includes the safety standards as well as relevant non-safety standards.
I think where we might be getting off track here, so let me just see if I understand this right. It says licensed or approved, whatever the words are. That's being described as two tracks, but that really isn't two tracks, is
not
it?
Not at all.
You have a plan that's a title that satisfies HHS requirements. That's one track. Then you have another track, which you say isn't part of your state plan.
That's was part of our state Title IV-E plan. That's correct,
right,
Your Honor.
So your friend on the other side says no. If something is a, they say that you've already submitted your separate plan to HHS and they've approved it, and so therefore they should get the higher benefits. And he cited us to some pages that I don't have in front of me. So what's your answer to whether you did submit this other track and whether the federal government did approve it?
We have not submitted it, they have not reviewed it, and they have not approved it. The page that he cited to is wrong in that there's absolutely no place in our record that says that that separate state system has been approved. It is wholly a creature of state statute. It is wholly a creature of state administrative regulations.
I have the same question as Judge McKee. What is the page that he refers to? Is this a document submitted to HHS?
Well,
some of this turns on sort of the HHS approval process, which...
So there's a couple of things he cited to. First of all, he cited to our Title IV-E plan itself, which is in the record, pages 1,090 to, I think, 1,212. The preference for relatives he talks about, which is actually on page 1,168 of the record, that preference for relatives is a preference for placement with certified relatives over certified non-relatives. It is not just a blanket placement with any relative.
Certified is a term of art in Ohio, right?
Certified is what we call our licensing system. That's correct, Your Honor. So, yes.
My understanding is HHS wouldn't approve. They couldn't approve a lower. They wouldn't approve a lower standard plan under their regs. Like they wouldn't. You have to meet the certification standards in 671A10B or whatever the heck it is.
That's absolutely right, Your Honor.
So under the current regs, I don't know if you've looked at the amicus brief they filed in the Kentucky case, but their position is that it's the same standards, right? The license and approved, it has to be the same.
That's correct, Your Honor.
It doesn't even matter, and I agree with what Judge McKee was saying. There's a standard that's required to receive money. It doesn't matter what you call it, license, approved, whatever it is. In order to get the money, you have to do X.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. License or approved is completely comprehensive. It is meant to pick out the set of standards that have been reviewed, submitted, and approved.
The bottom line is you're arguing that approved doesn't mean you can meet lower standards.
That's exactly right. You cannot meet a lower set of standards and say that you have now been approved, especially a set of standards that HHS has not.
If the reg changes, then what do you? Then the states will have to submit. Will the states submit new plans, or would be their option to submit new plans?
Your Honor, it's hard for me to say what will happen on the basis of some proposed language because it has not gone through.
Okay, I understand that, but I'm not holding you to it. But I'm just saying that if, I don't know, I have no experience with this in the past, but if the language of the reg changes or HHS says we're going to now have a different standard, whatever it is, the state would then have to change its plan, I assume, and get it approved?
No, it would not, because once again, I agree with my friend here that this should start and end with the statute. And Section 671 is clear that any foster family home must meet the standards that have been approved by HHS. The only standards that are relevant for that inquiry in Ohio is the one that are the ones that have been submitted and approved. And those are the safety standards and the non-safety standards that are really important to the long-term welfare of every child.
The two of you seem to disagree about what HHS has actually approved. And I can't quite tell what the point of disagreement is. Are you saying the documents that your friend on the other side referred to were never submitted to HHS? Or are you saying they were submitted as, can I finish? Or were you saying they were submitted separate? Okay, well, what are they in your view? And did HHS ever see them?
They're not documents, Your Honor. They're regulations. They're in Ohio Administrative Code 2-42-18. And they're regulations that are part of Ohio's Administrative Code, and they come from Ohio's statutes. There's no...
That sets up the approval regime for family foster homes.
That allows for substitute placement, Your Honor.
Yes. I mean, I understand what Ohio has done. The question I have, again, is what was approved by HHS? And you're saying this was... In other words, the plan that you submitted to HHS for the full federal funding said nothing about we also want federal funding for these approved but not certified homes.
That is correct, Your Honor. So what we submitted to HHS is on pages 1090 to 1212. It is a full document that goes through every part of the Title IV-E statute and creates it's a document that points to where the relevant Ohio statutory code is, as well as Ohio's regulations that give force to our Title IV-E plan. All of our regulations that give force to that plan, which are cited in that particular document that is part of the record, those regulations are in 2-7-05. That is completely separate and apart from 2-42-18, which, as I told Your Honor, is not a document, is not something that was submitted, is not something that was reviewed, and cannot have been reviewed because it is purely a creature of Ohio's state statutes and regulations.
I understand the state being forthcoming and saying, here's our entire regime, which I think is partly what you're saying. But is there telling HHS, here's our entire regime for foster homes. But is there a bottom line, here's our request, here's, we want money for these certain types of homes, and here's what we're doing. We want money only for homes that have been certified, here's our certification process, which to me, that would exclude the approved but non-certified homes. But is there a page that sort of says, here's exactly what we want, and it limits it to the category of homes you're referring to?
No, Your Honor, we don't view it as a limitation. In fact, we view those relative caregivers who are not certified as completely outside of the foster family.
But HHS will only reimburse you for things for the Title IV-E plan, right?
Correct, Your
Whatever
Honor.
You, the self-contained Title IV-E plan, it gets approved by HHS. They reimburse you for any payments that were made pursuant to that plan.
Correct, Your Honor.
And you're saying that the regs and the other things that cover the approvals that's a state program, and you're funding some of it now, which is good.
And so, but that's not reimbursed by HHS. All right? And if you went to HHS tomorrow and said, reimburse us for that, they would say, no, it's not in your Title IV-E plan, right?
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And I guess to Judge Radler's point, there's no pretext here because states do, there are many states that have these sorts of interim placements with relative caregivers as they seek licensing or certification standards. So there's no...
I think your earlier answer perhaps a little differently than Judge Radler did. I understood you to say that in your submission for your Title IV-E plan, you don't even make reference to the solely separate Ohio reimbursement system. Am I right about that?
That is correct. We
do. He seemed to, I think, understand you to say you made reference to it, but you didn't seek permission to get money from the federal government for that.
We do not make reference to those regulations.
So it doesn't even appear. The separate regulations for Ohio kinship doesn't appear in the Ohio, doesn't appear in your plan at all, and doesn't therefore appear in the approval. That's your position.
Yes, but I kind of want to push back on the idea of doesn't appear in the approval. Licensing or approval is a comprehensive way of just stating the standards that have been approved by HHS. So I don't want to use the word approval there, but I do agree with Your Honor that...
I meant the word approval in the context of what the government agreed to, not the word approval in the statute.
Then, yes, Your Honor, we're on the same page. Title IV-E plan does not make a reference to this separate state system because the entire intention of that system is for those relative caregivers to graduate, to become certified.
And one other quick question. We've been sort of talking about, well, what if... And here, if it turned out that we interpreted the statute to require the government to reimburse, I thought one of you said earlier that the reimbursement is actually only about two-thirds of what the payment amount is. So if I heard that right, then the remaining one-third would be something the state would be then assuming the obligation to pay itself. Am
That's
I right about that?
Your Honor. Yes.
So we would be imposing, we ruled for the other side, what I'm guessing is a very significant financial obligation to start making the higher payments and absorb at least one-third of that.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think that goes to one of the points I wanted to make before I sat down today, which is that even before we get to a lot of these merits issues that we've discussed today, this entire suit is barred by the state's sovereign.
Can I ask you, I want to get back to that, can I ask you about GLSEN, though, just on this approval licensing? I mean, GLSEN seemed to contemplate that there were two tracks in Kentucky, and... it doesn't seem like, it seems like the standards, or maybe there wasn't a discussion of what the approval, there was reimbursement for the approval track, is my understanding when reading GLSEN, but there was only a discussion really about a distinction between relatives and non-relatives. But why doesn't GLSEN, I mean, it seems to me, doesn't it help the other side then on the approval part and recognizing license and approval as different things?
Not at all, Your Honor. And I think it goes to what you just said. The reason why there was no discussion more than relative and non-relative distinction is because it is undisputed there that the plaintiffs met all the safety standards approved by HHS in Kentucky's Title IV-E plan, as well as all relevant non-safety standards. So to the extent there's any discussion about there being a licensed category and an approved category, it's purely dicta. Because
so you're saying we should read GLSEN as saying that those parents, or the relatives that were in the approval category, met the Title IV-E plan standards in Kentucky, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. At page 383, you see that the plaintiffs there met both the relevant non-safety standards as well as the standards safety standards set for Kentucky in its Title IV-E plan. So, and I think there's the other important point that comes out of GLSEN, which does not help them and squarely falls for us, is that there can't be two separate categories of homes subject to two different standards, and that to a standard that has not been approved by the Secretary of HHS.
Let me ask you about the 11th Amendment. And let me ask you, because here's what I'm struggling with, and here's the line that it looks like we've drawn, and maybe I'm wrong. We have Price, which talks about a federal benefit program. We have Edelman versus Jordan. There's also other cases. Edelman cites Graham versus Richardson, Goldberg versus Kelly. They all seem to fall on the line of, if it's a federal benefit plan, asking for something prospective that's going to result in payments is okay. We have a line of cases, Barton, Ernst, Kelly,
where we talk about monetary prospective relief being not permitted, but in none of those cases was there a federal benefit program involved. Can we just draw a line at federal benefit programs? I understand it may or may not be defensible, but that's the line that I'm looking at. What's wrong with that?
Well, I'm not really sure where that line would come from on the basis of what was established in Ernst. And I take your point, Your Honor, that was not a case about federal benefits programs. On the other hand, it was a case in which the court does establish two independent inquiries into injunctive relief in the state's sovereign immunity landscape. And not only is prospective versus retrospective important there, but also whether the primary thrust of the suit
but
is
do we
money
have,
or non-monetary.
What case do we have? Do we have any federal benefit program that comes out your way?
Well,
I
Your
mean,
Honor.
None of them are. I just don't. And what Judge Kethledge says in Price is he just says, federal court may enjoin the state's officers to comply with federal law by awarding those benefits in a certain way going forward, even if the court may not order those officers to pay out public benefits wrongly withheld in the past, see Edelman versus Jordan. I mean, that it's a published opinion. The language is clear. I don't know. I mean, why doesn't that just kind of end the case for you on that point?
Two answers to that, Your Honor. First of all, with respect to Price, there is a distinguishable non-monetary goal there, which is the question there was about when the clock should start on the payment of benefits, not the amount that must be paid or whether benefits must be paid at all. And I think at least one circuit, I think like in Nacello or something, has said that we shouldn't take statutes that are about starting the clock and turn them into statutes about how much money to pay. But I also want to draw your attention to Wah School, in which Judge Clay, who did vigorously dissent in Ernst on the basis of there being Edelman and there being Papasan. And Judge Clay does apply the monetary, non-monetary distinction there and actually identifies another non-monetary goal that was sufficient for the case to proceed.
So is this just a matter of nomenclature? In other words, if they repled the case and just said we want equal treatment between these two, between certified and approved, we think it should be treated equally. They don't say anything about money. Would sovereign immunity apply there?
No, I don't think that sort of creative pleading will get around the issue here, and this is why. In Ernst, at least two of the prospective claims that were identified by the court were, in essence, pled as status changes. Allow us plaintiff judges to move from this status to this status. And similarly, changing the claim here from saying we want to move from non-foster family homes to foster family homes does not change the fact that the primary thrust of the suit
is money.
Are
you saying this is unreviewable?
Sorry?
This is unreviewable then? They could never challenge this because there's always a monetary component?
Well, I always push back on unreviewable in federal.
How is it? Well, I mean, I asked you if there's a way they could do it differently, and you said no.
Well, the enforcement, I think the appropriate enforcement would come from the federal government, which has the authority to withhold funds where it sees violations of Title IV-E. And there's a very specific provision here that does
There's no way that the parties themselves could bring this issue to federal court.
Your Honor, yes, I believe that's right, because the primary thrust of their suit is money, and the state sovereign immunity does bar that post-Ernst, and I think that rule squarely forecloses their claims in this case. But beyond that, I think not only can you affirm on the basis of immunity if you do not agree with us on that, you can also affirm for us on the merits themselves. And before I sit down, I also want to point out that at least some of the claims of two of the plaintiffs have been mooted since the beginning of this suit. I'm happy to answer any questions about that. I'm happy to answer any further questions about the issues we've discussed. But if not, we ask that this court affirm the judgment.
The Supreme Court granted cert in a spending clause case, by the way, right, to Belsky. That would also take care of this case if they came out and said that you could not bring a 1983 claim in a spending clause case?
Yes, Your Honor. If they did come out that way, it would take care of this case. On the other hand, this court could also affirm for us on the basis of sovereign immunity and on the basis of the merits if you do not agree with us on sovereign immunity.
All right, I understand. All right.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Can you just help me understand what was submitted to HHS and what wasn't submitted? Because
yes, Your Honor. I've pulled that up. So here, Your Honor, I'm holding the agency plan for Title IV-E of the Social Security Act, Foster Care and Adoption Assistance, State of Ohio. This is part of the record. The page ID for the cover of this is 1091. Turning to page ID 1178, the state of Ohio articulates how it's going to adhere to the federal this preference from 671 that whenever possible, children be placed with relative caregivers. It cites Ohio Administrative Code 5101242.05A through C and F. In that 5101242.05, it expressly states that the agency shall place children in homes of relative or non-relatives approved by the agency in accordance with 5101:242.18. In 5101:242.18, it says that the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services may approve placement with the following substitute caregivers: a relative by blood, adoption, or marriage. That's it. Ohio articulated to the Department of Health and Human Services exactly how it was going to effectuate that preference, and it, in effect, stated that it would be this two-track system. That's what the HHS signed off on when they approved it.
That the HHS signed off on a plan that specifically says that there are going to be lower certification standards for some of the people that are going to get placement.
So in so far as the federal law is concerned, the standards are set. So for example, those safety standards are set by 671A20, A through C. Beyond that, provided that the standards are above that, the state has discretion to set the standards at whatever it wants, the same, different, et cetera, provided that they're not below the federal standards. And at no point during the defendant's brief did they say that they were below the federal standards. Ohio just artificially made these standards different, and on that basis, Ohio is trying to shirk its obligation of paying this second track, the second category recognized by Glitzen, the second track.
We seem to have trouble getting the answer to the question of whether there are lower standards under the alternative Ohio plan. The district court set forth five or six different differences between the licensed caregivers and the relative or not substitute caregivers. You don't disagree with that.
We don't dispute the district court's characterization of the two respective standards. However,
if the district court is right, if I could just follow up that thought, there are these four or five different reasons that look to me clearly to be lesser standards for the kin caregivers. So back to the question that we're trying to get answered, you're saying that doesn't matter because the state has to pay regardless of whether you meet all the federal standards or you don't.
No, that's not what I'm saying. This is important. All of the federal standards are met, and the district court doesn't say otherwise, and the defendant doesn't say otherwise. There is no contention from the defendant at any point that the approval track goes below any of these federal standards. It's the federal standards under 671 that control. And further evidence of this is that HHS received the state plan, looked at Ohio's administrative codes, saw how they were doing this second permissible category for the approval track for kin expressly under those administrative codes, and signed off on it. Ohio has discretion to, once it satisfies the federal standards, Ohio has discretion to make licensing slightly more difficult than the approval track. And this is important. This is a point that the amicus briefs make quite well, which is that relative foster families find themselves inherently in a different situation. This is something that the defendant acknowledges. They are thrust into this position unexpectedly. They did not have a 6 month lead time to do dozens of hours and make sure that their home is completely up to code. But that is completely consistent with Congress's preference that whenever possible, they go with relative caregivers. Anything otherwise, and in the Miller case, the Supreme Court gets into this in footnote 21, anything other than that would disincentivize relative foster caregivers, and that would be the opposite of Congress's preference as recognized by the Supreme Court and as stated in the statute. One more thing that I wanted to note is that Your Honor asked me where the kind of walkthrough is in the briefing between the state plan that was approved and those administrative codes. That's best articulated in the reply from pages 19 to 20. And that's exactly, should be consistent with what I just explained when I was walking through
it. Important point to bury on page 20 of the reply brief, but I will definitely look at it.
I understand, Your Honor. There's also reference to it in the opening brief, but frankly, personally, I think that the reply brief's discussion of it is more robust and comprehensive.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Any further questions? No? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
We thank both parties for your briefs and your helpful arguments, and the case will be submitted.